We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month. It's always on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And so if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape, maybe you have some problem you haven't solved yet. You're already thinking about next year, thinking about what you want to plant, want to get scheduled, those things that need to be done at particular times. So maybe what you should do is get it. You're so organized, you already have your calendar for 2011. Pull that out and flip it over to the spring. You know, you might want to make some notes.
I want to meet that person. Or maybe I don't.
Well, maybe I'm only thinking, I'm thinking about it because when I came to work this morning, in my mailbox was my desk calendar for 2011. We have somebody here who is definitely on top of it. So I have there's nothing written in it, but I have a 2011 calendar. So maybe people are actually thinking about that. 333-9455 is the number. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Send us email. You can do that to will-talk@illinois.edu at any point here. If you have questions, you can call us. And we've already got somebody ready to go here. They're over in Lafayette, Indiana, and they're on the toll-free line, line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've long been taught to spread fertilizer on the lawn if I do it just once in fall, and if I do it twice a year, both of them in fall. How do we do it this year? We haven't had rain in about 6 months.
Yeah, good point. I mean, normally the last fertilization for lawns, if you're going to do another application, is actually usually about a week after your last mowing or so. So
that was last spring.
I know, it hasn't really been growing much. So generally, we typically think of mid-November or something like that is just fine. So we're at that point now, but you're right. It'd be nice to get some rain once we do it.
But we do it even if the grass is like rock and dormant?
Well, if it's already dormant, I probably would not do it. You're right. Typically.
Probably dormant now.
Yeah. Typically, you might be surprised. I mean, I'm not quite sure in your area necessarily, but in our area, it's still green. I mean, it's still doing something, and it certainly will, but it'd be better if we could get some rain on top of it.
Well,
so you may decide you just really don't want to do it this year, because you're absolutely right. If it's not doing anything at this point, it probably isn't going to help the grass all that much, and then you obviously don't want to over-fertilize, so...
Could we use some of it in the spring?
You certainly could just wait and do a spring application. But generally, we always say to wait a little bit later than probably most people think when it comes to spring applications. Generally, we say wait till around Mother's Day or so to actually go ahead and put on your spring application. So to do it in May rather than do it in April.
If it ever rains this fall,
let's hope.
Do I spread fertilizer before or after coring, aerating?
You know, you really could do either one, to be honest with you, depending on what their time period is. I think probably what I would do is probably put it on afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, and let's hope it gets, because coring is going to be really tough if the ground's hard.
Yeah, I can't do that either.
Yeah, it's just going to bounce across the top of the soil. So, yeah, coring is always better. So if there's a way you could water, you know, either after fertilizing or before core aerifying, that would help too.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Their questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You can also email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, I'm sure that there are people who are used to doing fall fertilizations, and I think the idea is that you put the fertilizer on there, and it just sits there. And so it's ready to go in the spring when things really start going, then the fertilizer is there. But even if you're doing those kinds of fertilizers where maybe it's a granular kind of deal, mm-hmm. and you got a spreader and you're going back and forth or whatever. Does that really, are you really depending on sometime after that having some rain or something, do you need to get that water, or do you actually need to water that in?
Yeah, you really, it does need to be, because the whole idea, you know, even though we don't think it's growing a whole lot, the roots are actually doing a lot of growth. So we don't necessarily see that the grass is doing a whole lot. But what we're trying to do is get good root growth to the point where it's going to make it through the winter better and then be stronger next year. So it actually is growing more than we might think. So as long as those soil temperatures are above 45 or so, they're still going to grow. The roots are going to grow. You're not going to see a lot of top growth, but you should see root growth. So it's actually going to – we want it to go ahead and use the fertilizer in the fall.
Oh, okay.
We really don't necessarily want it to sort of – fertilizer just to sort of sit there, because then you can have all kinds of problems and erosion or whatever, and then the fertilizer isn't there. So – excuse me. Let me have a cup of yeah, you talk for a while.
Okay. Sandy Mason is our guest. So we see her once a month, always on a Tuesday. She's here to talk about lawn and garden care. If she manages to make it through the hour, we'll continue to have her here. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Yes.
I think I'm okay now.
Are you okay? Okay.
It just, the subject just chokes me up thinking about it.
I know you get very emotional.
I get very emotional about this. Yeah. So the whole idea is we really do want it to go ahead and use the fertilizer now, do our fall application. So it's not that we're necessarily wanting it to stick around all winter and then use it in the spring.
Okay. So then if you put that on, and within a certain period of time, if we don't get some moisture, then really what you're supposed to do is actually go out there and water it in?
I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it, to do watering this late in the year. Yeah. But it really is, in order for the fertilizer to really be useful for the plant, there has to be some moisture in there. So if you are going to fertilize, I would definitely, and you haven't had any rain, or it looks like we're not going to get any rain, although it looks like maybe Saturday might get a little, at least around here, there might be a chance of rain. And we don't need a whole lot. If we got a half an inch, that would be fine. So I'd really think long and hard about, you know, am I going to fertilize? Am I willing to water if I don't get any rain? And if the answer is no, I don't want to water, then you may not want to fertilize.
Okay. Mattoon, line number four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
This year, for the first time, I'm real late putting in a row of garlic. I usually put in two rows, but I put one row in, I guess a week or two before the end of October. Usually I get it in early October or late September, but for health reasons, I didn't get it in until just about the last week.
Mm-hmm.
I let it go for a few days, and then I thought, well, maybe I ought to put some mulch on top of it. I kept it moist, so I had some commercial mulch left over that I had from Rural King, and I covered it with the mulch and let it set. Well, it's been so dry, I got out there yesterday and just soaked the mulch in the row. Am I too late on it, or?
Well, I think this, you know, typically, you know, we would think of, you know, planting, as you said, planting garlic usually around mid-October is really a good time when we're thinking about planting tulip bulbs. You plant garlic. So you're just a little bit late here. And I think the thing that's going for you this year certainly has just been the weather, just the fact that it is so warm and that's kept the soil temperatures up. So I think you're going to be absolutely fine. And I think you could go ahead and even plant some more. I wouldn't wait too much longer. And I will tell you, what you might want to do is actually, as long as it's warm like this, you might actually want to pull the mulch back, make sure everything's nice and moist, and then just leave the mulch off, and just so it can go, the roots can go ahead and get established, because that's what we're really trying to do for the fall crop, for this, by putting it in this early.
That's what I was wondering.
I'd pull the mulch off.
Pull that mulch off then?
I would, as long as it's going to stay warm like this. We're getting into a nice warm stretch here, and that way it can really benefit from that warm weather. And then once it looks like it's starting to get cool again, you know, as in really cold, then I'd go ahead and mulch
it. Before that real cold spell.
And that's fine. Absolutely. And if had it stayed cold, I think that would have been excellent. That would have been the perfect thing to do. But I think I would, because we're a little bit late in the season here, I think I would go ahead and try to get as much sunlight to those plants as we can.
Should I put it back on then in a couple of weeks, or just leave it
right
alone?
As soon as it looks like we're starting to get into the 20s or whatever in the evening, then I would pull it back over the plants.
Okay,
over the bulbs.
Uh-huh. All right, very good. And another caller here in Indiana, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, two things. You were talking about grass root growth, the temperature of the ground was 45. I was wondering, is there a particular depth you take that, or are you going by the ambient temperature above the ground? And if you are going to take it at a particular depth, are there, other than turkey thermometers, using a metal point? I'm serious about I listen to the Ag Boys, and they talk about the temperature, and they give a particular depth.
Right.
And
right.
I just wondered if holocultists, you know, follow across the train the same way.
Right.
And what that
right.
depth is, or this is really just more, you know, common sense than I realize.
No, there actually is, you know, we really do think about things. And typically, you know, depending on, for lawns, I probably look at the 4-inch level. I think they usually give it at the 4 and 6 inch level.
Yeah.
4 and 6.
Okay.
And
I was trying to guess what. What depth of roots are, you know,
right.
I really don't know. You know, I'm not
right.
going to go out and cut my yard up to find out.
Right,
four
right.
inches will do it.
Right. So usually, right. If it was other plants, I might think of the, you know, ones that have deeper root systems. I might think about the 6-inch
okay.
level. And your best bet is that rather than using the turkey thermometer, or really, because there are special thermometers that are used for soil
okay.
indication. So I would just check. I think the Illinois State Water,
State
Survey,
Water Survey
lists soil temperatures. And so you're better off just to go, if you have web access, just to go to their website, check the soil temperatures. And I think a lot of times the evening news or whatever, a lot of times the weather people, they don't necessarily say it, but a lot of times they'll show the soil temperatures too. So I would go by, you know, what they're doing rather than trying to do
okay.
it your own. And don't tell your wife you were going to use the turkey thermometer.
My wife, but my
may not go for that.
Second question deals with: is it just sensible to let false bamboo do its thing and not worry about it until the neighbors start getting upset, or is there a way to kill it? You know, economical, let's put it that way. I've been told by one fellow that the best way to do it is you bore hose in the runners, then you pour in certain kinds of poisons, which he wouldn't answer me whether they were, you know, allowed or not. I did find out that in some states you're not allowed even to grow it or plant it. But I've got it. It's beautiful, but it's starting to overcome a backyard and a neighbor. Mm-hmm. And we've cut it twice, and it just keeps growing back.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you might know of a way that, you know, at least sure shot, or at least have a good percentage on my side.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you say false bamboo, I'm not sure I know exactly what plant you're talking about. It's just one that...
It's a plant that looks like bamboo, and I think they call it... there's 3 or 4 different names for it, but the person I bought the house from called it false bamboo, and and when you bend it, it cracks. You know, the insides are empty, but it looks like bamboo from a distance.
And
I looked it up once on the internet, and it said that it's notorious for just taking over.
Well. Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those plants. I wouldn't wait till the neighbor complains, because more than likely then it's, you know, it's going to be a problem for you too as well, as besides just neighbor relations. But I would think long and hard about maybe getting rid of it, period, if it's going to be that big of an issue.
Okay.
And all those plants that run by rhizomes and stuff are really tough to kill. They have really big rhizomes.
Yeah.
They tend to run a long ways. And I will tell you, even some of the non-selective herbicides that we might use for other things, such as Roundup, you know, glyphosate-type products, really don't always do much to these plants, I will tell you. So even ones that people would use. So you'd almost have to go with, like, a brush killer or something that's a little bit different.
Okay. Well, that gives me some information so I can talk to the guy and so we can get on the same page, see what to do with it.
Yeah, they're really tough to get rid of, and so sometimes you're better off just to sort of get rid of it. Yeah. You may just.
And so luckily you showed up today, so I could check it out. Because he says a lot of things about gardening. I don't slice the idea one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I
want
to check on that because that's going to become a problem there. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
Well, okay, so I'm here on the web, and I'm looking at Japanese, this plant. It's apparently also known as Japanese knotweed, false bamboo, Mexican bamboo. It's Fallopia japonica.
Oh, yeah.
And it apparently, there's some comments here from people about this plant, and right at the top it says, here somebody writes in, "Welcome to the terrorist king of all invasive plant species. It laughs at Roundup. Pulling it up just spreads it. It readily chokes out anything in its path. I cannot believe anybody would actually want this plant." So there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Now I know exactly what
you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. And that is a horrible one. I have absolutely seen that all in different areas, and I would definitely just get rid of it. It's not worth growing. It's you know, there's plenty of other plants that can be grown, so I would just get mm-hmm. rid of it. And as it said, you know, the glyphosate Roundup type products don't even do anything to it. So yeah. it's really, really a tough one to get okay. rid of. So I would not start it. Don't let anybody give it to you.
Now, and I just, I'm sure I've talked about this before, that there are, and we've talked about the fact that if you like bamboo, there are bamboos that you can grow in the home landscape that will stay in a clump. Mm-hmm. They, in mm-hmm. fact, one of my neighbors had one that was, I thought, a really spectacular plant. It grew to be about, I don't know how to, you know, 12 feet mm-hmm. or tall or something. And I thought it was a really cool plant. And if you had the right place for
right.
it,
right.
I could see it fitting into your landscape. And this particular variety was pretty well behaved. It just pretty much stayed in this clump right. where it was planted. So if you like that kind of plant, you can find varieties that will not spread.
Right. And just look for ones, and they'll usually say it on there. It'll say something like clump forming mm-hmm. Rather than mm-hmm. running. If it says running, then yeah, then that's exactly what it means. It runs across the landscape. Yeah. And those are not the ones that I would be thinking about having.
I thought it was just a spectacular plant. I thought it was
sure.
really cool. But as I said, you have to have the right place to put it, because at least this particular variety would get very tall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah. mm-hmm. All right. Well, anyway, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Our guest this morning, this part of Focus, is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension Champaign County, and once a month on a Tuesday she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. So if you got questions, you can give us a call. Maybe one thing you might like to mention, I know I have taken a look at some of the recent columns that you have written, and just the most recent one is about the master gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that if you're thinking about doing that, going through the master gardener training, now's the time to sign up.
Yeah, absolutely. Champaign is going to be doing theirs this next year, and the training actually starts the end of January, but you need to put your application in now. So you can just go to the U of I Extension website and go to the Champaign County website, or you can also, there's also training that's being done in Danville, as well as I think Charleston is also doing training, so, and also Decatur, Springfield. So just check with your local U of I Extension or your Purdue Extension and see if they're, when they're doing their Master Gardener training. But most of it is done in the springtime, but generally now is the time to put in your application. And it really is a great program in the sense that you get, it's a nice broad mix, I think, of information from flowers to lawns to trees. You know, I think a lot of gardeners have that specialty, you know, they're really into flowers, but they don't know a whole lot about trees or whatever. But this gives you that nice broad background. And then it also gives you an opportunity to get involved in your own community, like here in Champaign County. We have the Idea Garden, which is a great demonstration garden for master gardeners, as well as people visiting the campus and local folks to see what's going on in gardening, as well as we have a garden at Crisis Nursery, also the Champaign County Nursing Home and the Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center. So it's a great opportunity for folks to get involved in their communities or give back to their communities and then also learn something along the way. So, you know, it's kind of the best of all worlds.
And how much, what sort of time commitment is involved?
That's probably the biggest thing, is that generally all the training is done in the daytime. And so it's usually about a 66 hours of training. So it's usually anywhere from 10 to 11 sessions. And they generally run all day, so from like 9 to 4. So you have to have some flexibility in being able to do that daytime training. But I will tell you that in Champaign County, we do offer an online version as well. So you can take the online version and sort of do that as you can if you just really can't get that time off. So there are some opportunities that way too.
Okay. Urbana. Hey, I have a caller right here, line one. Hello.
Yes. Hi, mm-hmm. Sandy.
Hi.
I sure enjoy you on the radio.
And, oh, good.
And
thanks.
Enjoy your column. You're really good at both.
Oh, thank you.
I'm on a really strict budget and live in rent a townhouse, so I can't like plant anything necessarily. But I'm just wondering if there's an inexpensive way now for the winter to for plants to put in a couple of planters, you know, and that's not going to cost a fortune.
For the fall, for the winter, for the...
Yeah, for now, and then I guess I'll call you in the spring and ask you what's next. But yeah, is there like an inexpensive something that will just look nice in a planter?
Well, I think, you know, besides mums, but there's certainly things like the pansies and violas. And generally, you can get those in like a 4-pack, and they're not all that terribly expensive. And those would probably be ones that I would be thinking about. Do you have any perennials in your yard at all at this point, or do you?
No.
Not really. Because there are some that actually do well even in planters, like I know this is a horrible name, the spotted dead nettle, lamium it's called. That actually is one that you can put in a container, and it usually looks pretty good clearing through December. Mine is blooming right now. It's a nice little ground cover, but it's actually blooming right now. So sometimes you can actually dig those up and put a little clump of it in your containers, and they do fine.
Could you repeat that? Spotted.
Yeah, spotted dead nettle, which is a horrible name, but lamium, it's L-A-M-I-U-M. And there's purple flowers and white flowers, and there's one called White Nancy and Purple Dragon, and they have a nice silvery leaf to them.
Oh, nice.
So they're really pretty, and they'll look nice probably through December. You know, once it gets really cold, anything in a container doesn't look all that great, unless you want to go with like an evergreen or something along those lines. But I will tell you, you can actually cut off, if you have friends or somebody that maybe has some evergreen trees, they wouldn't mind letting you do some cuttings on. You can actually go ahead and cut a lot of things and just, you know, stick them in the containers. And somebody with some red twig dogwood, you can put that in there for a little red color. And it's very inexpensive, because if you've got somebody that's got those plants, and usually there's enough certainly of red twig dogwood that you can do a lot of trimming on them, and it looks great. So you may
now, is that like planted into soil and then they'll grow?
No, they don't necessarily grow, but they just look nice for the winter, which is what I thought you were kind of going for.
Yeah.
So, you know, even things like yews, you know, a lot of people have yews, shrubbery around there that generally always needs some kind of pruning on them. And sometimes you can get the ones with the red berries on them. So sometimes just taking cuttings and kind of looking around. And if you do that now before the soil in the container freezes, you can just sort of stick it in the container, kind of make a little instant arrangement and go from there. I mean, right now you could add some like hedge apples, which have more of that fall kind of feel to them. I've seen people spray that. You know what I'm talking about with the big hedge apples?
Yeah, I sure do.
I've seen people spray paint those, you know, orange or whatever, and sort of put them in containers, and they look really neat for kind of a fall look.
Oh, I see.
Right, and then after Thanksgiving, then you can switch over more to sort of the evergreens and the red twig dogwoods and those
kinds
of things.
Now, if I'm putting soil in the planter, can you put bulbs in there now, too, and then something comes up in the spring?
How big are the containers?
I don't know. These are imaginary containers.
Oh, okay. I thought you already had containers maybe that you were thinking of. Yeah, the problem with bulbs is you generally, the containers that we're going to have generally are too small, and so they freeze and thaw too much, and so the bulbs generally don't do all that well. They need a little bit more protected area, unfortunately, for that kind of thing.
And then now, as far as the soil in the planter goes, what do you recommend? I mean, to kind of just buy dirt at the, you know, wherever, and just pour it in there, and that's it?
Yeah, you could just use, you know, just plain old, because we're not going to be growing anything in those, you could just go ahead and put garden soil in those, and that's fine. Or if you want to go ahead and get some soilless type mixes and some of those that we would use for containers, and then you can just reuse it next spring. Either way, if you want to go with something just really inexpensive, just again, find somebody that's got a little bit of garden soil that they can give you and just put those in, and that's fine. And you may find the red twig dogwood. I've actually stuck them in there, and sometimes they've actually rooted. So you,
really?
Sometimes you get these little instant shrubs. So,
cool.
And
well,
just,
if my neighbor or my friends know me and I'm in digging a hole in their yard.
You might want to ask first. I don't know if anybody's been arrested for stealing soil, but
trying to get some free dirt.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Right, and I would just make sure with the containers that it's one that can be left outside, because those ceramic and terracotta and stuff will break apart. So.
Yeah. Oh, they will?
Yeah. So just make sure that it's something that can be used.
Actually,
like that.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah. Sure.
I'm kind of deaf to plants indoor. And I've been able to keep I don't even know what to call it, mother-in-law
time. Uh-huh.
But what are other plants that like a person who kills plants off could could put in.
I give you a lot of credit for trying, because I know a lot of people just sort of give up. I don't know how you feel about philodendrons, but philodendrons they're really tough plants. And, you know, a lot of times indoors, the problem is we just don't have enough light for them, so they're not very happy. So philodendrons, I think, are great. And they're ones that if you forget to water, they do fine. They don't care.
I have killed a couple of those, believe it or not. But
really?
I'm telling you. But they did last for, you know, years.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of those are good. There's another plant called aglaonema, which I know is really kind of a tough name. Sometimes it goes by Chinese evergreen or something like that. But they have these kind of elongated leaves. And those are really pretty tough. Peace lilies are pretty tough. But those are a couple of them that you'd really have to water periodically. So if you're one of those that just totally forgets about watering, then a peace lily probably wouldn't be necessarily a good one for you. So there's certainly, I would go with some of them that maybe have some thicker leaves and some of those that look like they're going to, do you just usually just forget to water them? Is that usually what it is?
Or? No, I overwater
them. Okay. You love them to death.
I do.
Okay. Then good. Peace lily might be perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, peace lily might be good for you if you water, that's
okay.
Great.
Okay. What about like succulents? Are those easy to grow?
They are easy to grow. They tend to like a more light, and they tend to like drier soils. So if you love them to death and you overwater them, they're not as forgiving.
Yeah.
So you might go with a few other things. There's actually what's called a parlor palm, if you're looking for something that has a little bit more, a little bit different look to it. Parlor palms are good for low light. Some of the English ivy, there's a bunch of them that are for indoor environments, and those actually work out really well, too. So there's several of them out there.
Keeping like any kind, like ferns and stuff alive. Is English ivy, is it going to be easier to keep alive? Because I like the way
it
looks.
Right. Ferns are just, they're not very forgiving. Some plants will forgive you for forgetting to water them, and a lot of the ferns are not forgiving. You sort of forget, and that's it. So it's one of those things. They like a moist soil. So if you're used to watering on a regular basis, you may find that works out well. And then just check your soil. You know, using a nice soilless mix, make sure that the pot drains. If you put them in decorative pots and the pot doesn't drain, then that's not good. It's really easy to overwater them. If you're going to use decorative pots, I would put a pot inside of a pot.
Do
that double potting. And then that way, if you tend to overwater them, you can pull it out and make sure that there's no they're not sitting in water. So sometimes it's just the containers are causing us issues too.
Oh, okay. That's good to know too.
Sure.
Well, great. Uh-huh. Thank
good luck.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that now we're at the end of the growing season, so there's not so many things you can do. But I think that probably for people who are either they're renters or maybe they just don't have a lot of places in the home landscape to plant stuff. If they do have places where they can put a container and there is sun, there's all kinds of stuff you can grow in containers. You can grow a lot of different plants. You can grow flowers. You can grow tomatoes. You can grow herbs. Sure. You can grow all kinds of stuff in containers as long as you got some place where there's sun.
Right. And probably the biggest thing, certainly through the growing season, probably the biggest thing is that you're generally going to find you're going to have to water them more often, but they're easier to water generally because they're smaller and stuff. So you have to kind of pay attention to the watering aspects of it. But like you said, there's a lot of things that you can grow in a container, and there's generally no weeds. That's the good part.
No weeding. All right then. A little bit past our midpoint here, Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have questions, trees, shrubs, flowers, grass, vegetables, houseplants, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. And here's someone else to talk with in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. A bit of advice for the person with the brown thumb. One way to avoid overwatering with houseplants is to use wick watering. It'll only feed enough of the wick, which is usually a strand of yarn, perhaps knitting yarn. It must be an acrylic or a man-made fiber. If you use wool or cotton, it's going to rot out. But wick watering will prevent both underwatering and overwatering. You place the pot above a reservoir, and the reservoir can be any kind of container with a hole in the lid. It can be anything from a yogurt container to a fancy vase. And the wick is fed into the pot of soil and then down into the reservoir. And all you have to do is remember to fill the reservoir once a week, or if it's large enough, once a month. Put a note in your electronic calendar, water on this date, and it will particularly help with the person who loves their plant to death and overwaters.
Good suggestion.
Well, I appreciate this. This is something I've never heard of. It sounds ingenious. So it would be the kind of thing that if you, as long as you remember to make sure that you fill your reservoir,
yes,
then the rest of the time it pretty much takes care of itself.
And one tip on the clear reservoirs, if you put a baggie in or some kind of a bag, as the algae begins to build up, you simply replace the bag and the container never gets green.
Oh.
And I would put in a tip for one plant that I think should be grown more as a house plant, and that's the abutilon. It can't dry out more than about three times, or it's toast. But it
three strikes and you're out.
Beautiful flowers, anything from red to yellow. I never have seen a blue, but some are in the form of the Japanese lantern flower. Others are hibiscus type. They're a member of the hibiscus family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they can make a beautiful houseplant, but they do need a lot of light and consistent watering.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, thanks.
Okay, thanks
very much. I'm sure that probably for, as you say, for a lot of people, the problem they have with houseplants is getting a spot where the plants are going to get enough sun.
I think,
in our house, I can really only think of one window. And that even not that one is I'm not sure if it would really be good enough light for an awful lot of things.
Yeah, especially through the winter time,
yeah,
where we have those shorter day lengths or shorter sunlight lengths, and so that's really sometimes an issue. But plants will really, if you've got a reading light or some sort of supplemental light, they can benefit from that as well. So sometimes just placement even of some sort of supplemental light can help too. So, and then just selecting those plants that will tolerate that kind of lower light level.
Mm-hmm. Moments is next, line four right here. Hello.
Yeah. Good morning.
Hi.
Appreciate it. Two quick things for your guest, if I could.
Sure.
In Kankakee County up here, I have a vegetable farm, a pretty big family and friends, kind of a communal thing, and we had lousy luck with our tomatoes and peppers this year. Up here, we had a lot of, the temps were pretty good, but we had a lot of rains early, and I wondered if that had something to do with it, or if the flowering seemed weak also. The ground northeast Kankakee County is pretty heavy clay, and I amended quite a bit to know what to do with it, but this year was just a bust for the most part. Wonder if you had any feedback on that over the state.
I haven't heard. I mean, for this year, last year was a big issue because it never really got hot enough. But this year, if people got them in, because, we had a pretty wet June, if people got them in, then from what I could tell, most people had pretty good luck with them. So I'm not sure if there was anything sort of statewide, or at least from what I can tell weather-wise, on why they might not have done well. So it could have been, they just didn't seem like they were flowering well, you said, or?
Right. Yeah, the flowering was probably about half, and the ground had gotten, our rains up here were the early rains, the May, June, and early July rains were all big. The temperatures were very good, but the rains were heavy. You get nothing to get an inch and a half to 3 inches each time on this.
Wow.
This clay ground gets so hard, and I just wondered if the root system, when it gets kind of root bound like that, if that's an issue. When I pull the plants out, they didn't have nearly the root mass we're used to seeing, because this ground is kind of unforgiving on heavy water.
Right, and you're absolutely right. And probably what happened is because of that really, really wet period there, they probably got some root rot issues. And sometimes it's really hard to get past those root rot issues because it kind of continues to the, till they finally, and then they have reduced root system, so they don't grow as well, and then they need more water when it does get dry. And so it kind of sets up a poor trend. And so I think you've hit upon the exact thing that probably happened, was that those early rains, you got some root rot issues because of the soil and all that kind of stuff. And then
the foliage was
went
good
from there. Yep, it sounds like you probably had some root rot issues, and it probably wasn't a whole lot. It probably just took so much extra care for them to get through even the rest of the season, even to stay alive, that they probably just didn't have enough in them to go ahead and flower.
I see. That's what I'd heard.
Yeah.
Maybe next.
Yeah.
It's, just a quick question on a I've gotten a catalog stuff seeds every year, and this one company I got it was either a butterfly or a hummingbird mix where it comes in 4 or 5 ounces for, say, 400 or 500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a nice mix of flowers, and it did terrific. But there's one plant, I never kept the paperwork on it, and there's one plant that was quite tall, and they called it for either hummingbird or a butterfly mix, maybe a 6-foot plant, very woody, inch, like almost like a sunflower stem, but a lot of stems and a lot of flowers. The flowers bloom really late. And they're orange. The petals are orange, but I mean late. They bloom right before this frost here the last 10 days. And do you have any idea what that is or what that might?
You might do some checking. They're actually has a horrible name. There's a plant called sneezeweed, which has a horrible, horrible name. But helenium. It's H-E-L-E-N-I-U-M, I think. And so you might just look at some pictures of that, but I'd almost bet it's probably close to that, or maybe even most of the sunflower relatives and stuff still stay with that kind of yellow, unless it happens to be a cultivar. But with that orange, that would be the only late season orange thing I can think of, if it has that more daisy type almost like a sunflower.
Right. Nine petals, really orange, beautiful flower, but so late. I mean, it was. I planted it fairly reasonable, late May, early June.
And
they just came huge growth, and then buds, and then late. And I said, well, you're not going to make it. Sure enough, right at frost, they started to bloom like crazy.
Don't you hate that? So I would check on that helenium, the sneezeweed. And then, I don't know, it would have normally bloomed earlier, but maybe because everything was pushed back because of the cold weather. There's another plant called Tithonia. And I think it's called Mexican sunflower, might be the common name. And that would be another kind of a daisy orange, and it gets really tall, but it's great. It's often used for butterfly mixes. Tithonia would be the other one I would look at. And normally it would bloom a little bit earlier, but I think probably everything was pushed back because of the wet weather.
Okay.
So that would be
thanks very much.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you for the call. About 10 minutes left here with Sandy. If you got a question, give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. So here now, yesterday to today, tomorrow, we've got some warmer than average days. I mean, pretty, really nice if you have the opportunity to be outside, and now's the time to be doing it. Anything in particular, say, okay, if you haven't done it, now you want to be thinking about doing it, particularly as you get the chance to be outside.
Right. Well, if you have any bulbs, obviously, you want to get those in the ground right away, because kind of give it a second chance. So if you have tulips and daffodils, I'd get those in the ground as soon as you can. It's not too late to plant trees and shrubs. I mean, woody plants, generally, we can plant them through November and still be fine. And sometimes you can get them on sale this time of year. So if you're really thinking about, I think I'd like to have these shrubs or whatever, you know, I'd go for it. I wouldn't hesitate to go ahead and do that now if you want to. Certainly, as far as cleaning up the garden, that's always, you know, people, do it in the spring, do it when you have time. You know, in some respects, some of the stuff looks nice in the wintertime, or it provides seeds and stuff for wildlife, but sometimes it's just a matter of sort of cleaning things up, and then you have that done for the springtime. But generally, we want things to die down naturally. Certainly anything that had some disease issues, like if you had peonies that had, you know, diseased issues, I get that foliage out of there. So anything with a disease issue or even an insect issue, I'd be getting that stuff out of there, because a lot of that stuff will overwinter and you have the same problem next year. So getting that stuff out of there and do some good sanitation is always good too.
Yeah. So with that stuff, you really wanted to get rid of it, like get it off your property, and not just take it and put it on the compost pile, or put it in that corner where you hide your sins in the you know that place. I am one of those places where you just kind of dump stuff and kind of pretend like it doesn't exist.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of those things that I thought somebody had a good idea one time, where they said they had kind of two different compost piles. They had one that was kind of a flower compost pile and a kind of vegetable compost pile. Mm-hmm. And then when they had something diseased that was off of a flower, they put it in the vegetable one, and then they sort of switch, because typically, you know, it's going to stick with, you know, whatever the disease is on the peony. It's going to go to other peony, you know, it'd be that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's part of that. The other part is if you do have a place where you can just sort of bury this stuff, that's probably better. There is, if you are actively composting, probably most of that stuff pretty well goes by the wayside. There's a certain amount of dilution factor by the fact that you have all this compost, and there's probably a certain amount of dilution anyway. So I'm not sure I'd worry about it a lot in the sense of whether it's disease stuff or not. And I pretty much throw all my stuff in the compost pile. And it is one of those things, all those funguses and stuff, a lot of times they're probably out there blowing around anyway. You just don't want to make it worse by having the foliage sit there right next to the plant come springtime.
Okay. Now we got a bunch of callers. We'll see if we can do them all. And we'll start right in with Champagne. Line one. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
It's a great day. I do have time to clean up my garden. I'm out here right now, and if you can answer my question, because last year I planted some ryegrass, and I think it made a big difference because I had a really good crop this year,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like my soil needed a little bit of injection. And can you give me a little bit of insight on cover crops like ryegrass and how good that is for your garden?
I think cover crops are great. We're kind of in the point now where some of them were probably a little bit late for. If you're going to do buckwheat's another one that's often used, but generally we're going to do that at the end of August, first of September. So some of them need more time to develop. So late like this, it might be a little harder. You certainly could do something, even if you had something like winter wheat or even rye. Probably the biggest thing with all, it's a great idea. And it's one of those ideas that has been around for a long time, but we kind of gotten away from it for any number of reasons. I'm not sure why. But if you have fallow ground, so something that's going to sit over the winter time, vegetable garden or whatever, I think it's a great idea. It helps against erosion. And then next year, typically what we would do is go ahead and till it in. Because the big thing with that is you don't want it to go to seed. Any of the stuff that you use, you really don't want it to go to seed because you don't want to create weed issues. So let it come up, do its thing. And it's probably warm enough now that I would think rye would probably still do fine and still come up fairly quickly. So at this point, you'd have to do something that's going to come up quick. But it's a great idea. Just don't let it go to seed next spring. Till it in or just work it in, flip it over, whatever you're going to do. But it's a great opportunity. They call it green manure because it does add, that great organic matter that we always want, too. So great idea.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you. To next, Muhammad, line two. Hello.
Yes. This year, for the first time, we have planted pansies in pots for spring flowers. Never had them in pots before. Do we need to sink those pots in dirt to keep them over the winter? Or?
Yeah, they're in plastic pots or something that can make it
through the... No, ceramic or clay.
Yeah, probably it's really going to be tough because a lot of those won't tolerate the winter, and those will end up breaking apart for you. So if you have them in plastic pots, I would definitely the problem with small containers, even the plastic ones like that, is that if they freeze and thaw, the plants don't do all that well. So if you are going to leave them in a container, either and want them for next spring, I would definitely sort of sink the container in the ground, either or put, you can sink it in the mulch pile or compost pile or whatever, just something so that the outside of that pot is protected against doing a rapid freeze and thaw.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we'll go next to Olney, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
You may have covered this previously, but I just can't remember. Do I cut roses back in the fall or the spring?
Well, you really want to do your major pruning in the spring. Right now, I would do, anything that's really tall and whipping around in the wind or whatever, you might trim that back. But I would wait until spring like the 1st of April or so, when it's first starting to bud out. Then I do my major pruning if you feel like you need to do that. This time of year, if you've got grafted roses, you want to make sure you put mulch over them or somehow protect that grafted area. And I would, if you have problems with rabbits, they love roses to eat them all winter long. So I'd be putting chicken wire, some kind of wiring over roses because they'll get picked on hard from rabbits.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Appreciate it.
All right. Very good. To Paris, Paris, Illinois. Next caller, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. question about trees. Done a lot of tree planting this fall and last year also. Being we've been so putty dry, what do we do as far as water, and when do we think about, okay, I can shut down water and for the season? I've got water bags on these trees, and I've been mm-hmm. going back and periodically checking underneath them just to make sure they're moist, but I don't want those root balls to dry out on those new plantings, and I'm
right.
still concerned about last year's trees.
So what's your thoughts on that? Mm-hmm.
Are most of these deciduous? They drop their leaves?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those, I think you just you don't want bone dry soil. And I was checking my soil the other day. I was amazed how dry it was. So I would really be thinking about continuing to water. And I know that sounds, you know, like I can't believe we're doing it in November, but I continue to water. And you're doing the right thing. Check the soil. If it appears moist, I wouldn't worry about it. But if it's starting to get dry, I would definitely water it. Because even though they drop their leaves, you don't want those roots to dry out. So you're absolutely right. I think you're right on the right track. And you may, and I would continue until the ground freezes. So you may be doing this clear into December without, yeah.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, unfortunately.
People asked me about that also, and you know, and I was like, well, you know, what I've always understood is if it's dry and the ground's not frozen, you continue to water, yep. But I just wanted to clarify that.
Right. And on evergreen trees, it's even more important, and you may have to water. Actually, people have evergreens, they may find they have to water even more often because they're continuing to lose moisture through those needles. But once a tree's dropped their leaves, I would still water if it gets bone dry.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. You're great.
Thank you. Let's see. We'll go to another caller here. This is Robinson, line one. Hi.
Hello, Sandy. This is your father.
Hey, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
I have another suggestion for the yellow flowers of the gentleman who planted a mix of butterfly and hummingbird seeds.
Uh-huh.
That is Cosmos sulfurea.
Oh, sure.
Or the yellow-orange Cosmos.
Oh, sure.
Is capable of growing to 7 feet high and blooms all summer and late.
Oh, good idea, because you're absolutely right. And I bet a lot of times Cosmos is in those mixes. So good suggestion. So,
okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, hey, thanks, Dad. My dad in Florida will be interested in that as well.
I'm not sure we want to talk about that.
He's my radio dad.
There's some story here that we probably really don't want to go into. So in that case, I'll go to an email. Have someone who writes, Sandy's visit got me thinking about my perennial question, when to prune privet and use. I went to my bookshelf, and on my complete guide to gardening, I found a sticky note to myself, quote, prune, use, and privet around February or March, late winter, early spring. Is that right?
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Butterfly bush. Should I cut that back hard now?
Yeah. I think as people were thinking about pruning anything, my general feeling is, and I think that's probably what most people think, is the sense that we really don't want to do a lot of heavy pruning when a plant's getting ready to go through a very stressful time. And winter's stressful, even for deciduous plants. It's still stressful for them. Mm-hmm. So generally, if you can wait, I would wait until spring, or at least wait until really hopefully through the really hard winter. So we're talking about end of February, March. All that is usually fine, except for plants that bloom really early. Because if you cut them at that time, you're going to lose the flowers. So things like lilacs, forsythias, those things that bloom really early, if they bloom before June 15th, you want to prune them after they flower. Because otherwise you're going to be pruning off the flowers. And are you going to kill the plant? No. But you're probably going to prune off the flowers. So it's one of those things. So butterfly bush, it'd be another one of those. I would wait until spring. I would absolutely wait until spring. And then you can see what lived, what didn't live, those kind of things. And really, really wait until we go through that really cold stuff, if you can.
Okay. And the issue, I think, a lot of things is what you will actually do by pruning them is you're going to encourage growth, which you don't want. If you're going to do that and it's going to encourage it to put out some new growth, and then suddenly it's going to freeze.
Right. And it also exposes those areas that maybe, especially with evergreens, those areas that actually were covered up, now they're exposed. Mm-hmm. And so you may actually get some browning or burning from that. You also have to think about those stems. You know, those stems are actually food reserves. So anything that has a stem that's still alive, that's food reserve. That's food that the plant can use next year as it's starting to go ahead and bud out or live through the winter or whatever. And so I think you're really better off if you can wait until we get through the really, really cold stuff.
All right. One more at least. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm trying to make a hedge and shrub border. I've got a row of arborvitae and then some hardy azaleas and a few box. And so what I'm particularly worried about is the box. They are the kind with a little bit of yellow variegation, and should I wrap it up in burlap over the winter?
Mm-hmm. Is this the first year for them? Did you just plant
them? Second. They did have a little bit of frostbite last year.
Yeah. Usually it's the wind that causes the issue for them. So,
well, there's not much wind protection.
Yeah. So I would really think, and I think you've hit upon something, actually burlap or anything that you can sort of slow them down. And I wouldn't necessarily put it right on the plant. I'd probably, you know, try to put it on the windward side or whatever just to make sure that it doesn't get those strong winds, or just put it a little bit away from it or something, just to sort of calm the winds down a little bit. Because anything that's, especially the broadleaf evergreens, if you had rhododendrons or boxwoods or whatever, is that the wind is what really hurts them around here.
Well, okay. Well, that's the next question. Yep. The hardy azaleas. I've been doing that wind screening ever since I put them in 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and they are looking so scrawny and straggly.
Yeah.
So I just give up?
Yeah.
There is no protection back there. I mean, they get the south wind and the north wind.
Yeah. So, and that's a tough environment for those plants. But I will say, did you do some soil amendments and stuff? Because, you know, they need that acidic soil. So it's
right at the time, so I should be putting in some of that extra fertilizer.
Right, yeah. Typically, we do that for acid-loving plants, you know, through the growing season.
Well, but and they're right at the base of some pine trees. You'd think it would be acid there already.
Well, you know, people think that, but that's not necessarily true.
Ah.
And so I think the common thought is that pine needles cause acidic soils, and they really don't. For our soils, it's really tough to actually change pH. Our soils are very moderated, so it takes a lot to change the pH, and a few pine needles isn't going to do it. So it really isn't acidic as you might think. So your best bet is just, I think you're probably hitting upon it. And then the boxwood would like that too. It's more acidic soil too.
Okay. Now, should I do that now, the amendment, now or in the spring?
You certainly could go ahead and add sulfur,
yeah.
Which is a powdery stuff that you can add, and that would help. Ideally, that should be down in the root zone. So if these plants, if you think you're just going to forget about them and start out, this would be a great time if somebody's thinking about starting a rhododendron bed or a blueberry bed or whatever, is put the sulfur, really amend the soil several inches deep. You really want that sulfur down there during where the roots are actually, where they're actually going to be growing.
So you're not recommending the a rapid grow that's especially for the broadleaf evergreens?
Well, you would do that through the growing season, not really now, because
okay.
you're really not wanting them to grow. You're trying to change the soil pH at this point.
Sulfur it is. Thanks
yeah.
so much.
All right. Thank you. Well, we're kind of coming down to it on the program. Any last sort of thought you might like to leave with folks?
I think probably the big thing is really thinking about planting trees and shrubs, and don't be afraid to go ahead and do that. It's just really is a great opportunity now that we're getting some happy, decent weather, and to water things. And evergreens, I think, are really going to be hurting this year if we don't start getting into some rain.
Yeah.
So.
We had what a strange year. We got so much moisture. It was just fabulous. And then at some point, it just like the tap just got turned off and then we got nothing.
Yeah. It's anymore. It's like, I don't know what a normal year is anymore because we haven't had a normal year for a long time. So I think people just have to think about what do the plants need and then go from there. And then don't, you know, as far as shredding leaves, you know, you certainly can start a compost pile. It's a great time to do that
okay.
as well.
Sandy Mason, she's sure. horticulture educator, U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here. We talk about lawn and garden care. Thanks.
Thank you.